This episode is brought to you by StubHub.
There's nothing better than seeing your favorite artists live in concert, and StubHub gets that. Explore your live style on the world's largest ticket marketplace.
And stick around, because a little later in the show, we'll be talking about our all-time favorite live events.
Make sure you head on over to StubHub.com/pop to find your next concert ticket. Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
All right, so Nate, here's what I want to do today.
Yeah.
So award shows. We just had the Grammys recently.
Yes.
And award shows are so heavily focused on showmanship, celebrity, fashion, and spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than do a sort of Grammys recap show about how did it all go down, I thought it'd be much more interesting to ask, what musically makes an award-winning song?
Ah.
We kind of forget these massive pop songs are winning because they're also music. And we get wrapped up in all that spectacle. So what I've done today is I've established some new categories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, new award categories.
Audacious. I like it.
We're going to take some of the award winners and we're going to assign them some new... Yeah.
some new hardware?
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
So we got best throwback.
Best throwback.
Best conceptual composition.
Best conceptual composition.
Best bridge.
Best bridge.
I really like bridges. And then we have a worst song.
And then worst song. Okay. Yeah. I love it. Okay. I love it.
So I believe that each of these winners is more than just a spectacle, and that in this year especially, there's some outstanding music. So let's just kick it off with a track from my favorite winner from this year.
Okay.
But I'd rather fight and lose sleep at night. At least you're on mine. What if nothing ever will change? Oh, I'm caught between your love and a hard place.
Oh, so this is Gabby Wilson, also known as Her, stylized as H.E.R. Dot. And she won for Best R&B Performance for her song Best Part and Best R&B Album. And this song, Hard Place, is one of my favorite tracks off of that album. She performed this at the Grammys, slinging a crystal clear Fender guitar in a very sort of Prince-like fashion with a whole set of strings and gospel choir backing it all up. And it was just absolutely stunning. She's an amazing vocalist, multi-instrumentalist. And I think that Hard Place, for me, wins Best Chord Progression. This is a simple chord progression. I think it's the same chords all the way through, three chords. But what she's doing is just, it's so beautiful. The lyric is, I'm caught between your love and a hard place. And I think we get that sense of melancholy by her use of this technique, modal mixture. Right?
Yeah. So this is the best chord progression winner. I love that. Because of it, the way it mixes major and minor chords to reflect the melancholic message.
Yes, exactly. And this is just, and it's just one of my absolute favorite ones. So here, what I wanted to do to sort of emphasize the power of this chord progression was I played it on guitar and...
So, a crystal clear guitar?
I wish. I'm not so
too
lucky.
Bad. Too bad.
And so here's the way that she plays it.
Dig it.
Beautiful, right? It's just like you feel that there's a little tear going down your eye. Just immediately thinking of some...
No, that's just some dust. Really.
And, but imagine if she had taken the same thing and hadn't done that modal mixture. I think it's instructive to look at what if that second chord, rather than being minor, was a major chord.
Okay.
So I've taken the same thing and done it how maybe it could have been done.
Ooh, yeah, subtle. And we're just, the only difference there was in the second chord.
Yeah.
Minor the first time, major the second time.
And, you know...
Wait, let me hear that. Let me hear the minor again.
Okay.
Right there. Oh, wow. Yeah. Big difference, yeah.
Yeah. And For me, the when you put it into the major, the brightness ruins all of the melancholy.
Not a best chord progression winner.
This is a chord progression that you might have heard many times before. I mean, it's not totally original, but it's just deployed so well here. One of my favorite references that uses this same progression actually comes from a film. It's the theme of Brokeback Mountain.
Fascinating.
Yeah, check this out. Here's the minor, and it comes back around to the major.
Huh. Yeah, I hear it.
And I think Brokeback Mountain is dealing with a similar issue of caught between your love and a hard place, yeah, right? It's like there's I'm wanting this thing, and yet it's not available to me. In is that Wyoming or Montana of the time?
Yeah, Wyoming,
right?
I think.
Yeah. Right, and so I think that she, in the same way, is using this chord progression really beautifully, and so I thought, why not just throw them together?
Surprisingly effective.
It works. I love this song. I love this artist. And just because her is so fantastic,
yeah.
I wanted to play one other song off of the album.
Great.
This is the song Focus. This was the first song I heard of her. And when I heard this, I think I heard it playing in LA on KCRW or something.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, that is a great song. People should listen to this. And I have to be honest, when I was watching the Grammys and her won, I was like, people know who her is? I sort of says that I probably live under a rock. So this is Focus. Hey. Can you focus on me? Baby, can you focus on me?
Me. Whoa.
Yeah. So
another just
ooh.
Coruscating chord progression.
Much more clever progression going on. But the thing that just totally takes me about Focus and much more of her less acoustic focused music and a lot of the stuff on the album is more sort of straight up R&B.
Mm.
This isn't just R&B. This is like trap style production done in an R&B style. The aesthetics, the 808 kick drums, the hi-hat stutters, all of that feels like it's coming from trap, but she's just slowing it down and making it sensual and giving it its own character.
Mm.
It feels like something that has been adapted and maybe we heard in folks like The Weeknd on a song like Often. And we get some of it as well on Khaled, and his song has a lot of that the harp going on as well. Send me your location, let's focus on communicating, cause I just need the time and place to come through.
But it's like the sensitive side of trap.
Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. She sort of works with that similar aesthetic, but has given it its whole new language.
Mm. Well, that arpeggiated piano we heard on Focus as well doesn't belong to any of those worlds. I don't know. That seems migrated from a totally separate musical universe.
Wait, which part is this?
In Focus, that arpeggiated, shimmering piano line.
Let's listen to it.
It's very classical.
Yeah. Can you focus on me? It almost sounds like a harp and a piano layered together.
It's a digital instrument in the uncanny valley between the two, perhaps.
It's a beautiful thing. So I want to award her with best chord progression on top of all of her other awards. So that brings us to our next award. I'm very excited about this one. This is Best Throwback, and we get to talk about an artist who I have been wanting to go deeper into so many times, and we just haven't had the opportunity. It's Dua Lipa.
Mm.
Dua Lipa has an outstanding voice, an incredible performance, a great songwriting sensibility, and she won for both Best New Artist, as well as Best Dance Record.
Hmm.
She had an amazing performance with St. Vincent, where they matched Mass Seduction and One Kiss.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
That was great. More Prince references, I feel, in that
absolutely.
St. Vincent's performance. Yeah. Sorry, please continue.
Yeah, no. And so we want to look at her song Electricity with Silk City, Diplo, and Mark Ronson, which she won Best Dance Record for.
Great.
And even if I could, I wouldn't turn on you. And I would stop the world for you. You know, I wanna let you know. I'll never let this feeling go. This love has no ceiling. I cannot deny. And even if I could, I wouldn't turn on you.
So good.
You know, this just proves that house music is just eternal. It keeps coming back, right? And for me, this wins Best Throwback because it is just so thoroughly in the house music tradition.
Totally.
And so what I wanted to do here is point to how this thing is, though, yes, a contemporary pop song, I think nails house music just so well.
Yeah.
And so the song that came to mind for me is Where Love Lives, which is an Alison Limerick track from 1990 and mixed by sort of like the forefather of house music, Frankie Knuckles.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So let's take a listen to this. And I think you're going to hear, we got a little bit of similarity going on. There are a couple of essential elements here that we're hearing on both tracks, and we've got house piano, we've got 4-to-the-4 kick drums, we have sub basses, and we have these amazing high-pitched synth strings. So let's just start from the top of those. We've got the house piano, I think, is just one of the essential sounds. As soon as you hear it, you're in that genre. So at the top of the track, we get house piano. And that is that. Again, a digital version of a piano that is somewhere between a piano and a percussive something with all these delays. Well, Dua Lipa starts the same way. With actually a slightly more maybe honest acoustic piano, but it still has that heart attack.
Totally.
Next essential element is you got to have a 4-to-4 kick drum, obviously.
Yeah. Thud, 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 thud.
Yeah, you get the same thing. A house track would be incomplete if it didn't have an amazing sub bass that just holds the groove together.
Uh-huh.
You hear that really thick bass line in the bottom end, right?
It's almost more felt than heard in
some ways. Yeah. I think that the bass is pushed even louder in the Dua Lipa track.
No doubt.
And then finally, it's just essential since the track Strings of Life, you have to have some kind of string element, right?
Yeah.
And so here's the strings in Where Love Lives. And the strings in Dua Lipa. Give it to you. And even
if I could, I wouldn't turn on you. So in both cases, it's that high-pitched, thin, synthesized violin section in the background of each track.
So when you've got those house piano stabs, the 4-to-the-4 kick drum, a big sub bass, and that awesome synth flying high up above, that synth string flying high, you've got a house track. The other thing, though, that the song has is it has her voice. And her voice is totally unique right now, I find. It's a deep alto, very throaty, powerful.
Totally.
You know who it reminds me of?
Is it a singer with 4 letters in her name?
It is indeed.
Yeah. And that singer is
Cher. Yes. This is Cher's Strong Enough from 1998, and you're going to be like, oh, yeah, this is, that's track,
I don't need your sympathy.
Piano, voice. We're going to move forward, build strings. It up, get the strings.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And we're going to get the strong enough to live without you. Strong enough. 4-to-4 kick, same subby bass, and hear probably a lot more of the disco reference as well.
Yeah, that was fun. What song was that?
That's Strong Enough.
That was great.
But we were really actually supposed to be focusing on her voice.
Sure,
and
sure.
It just has this, like, it's in the back.
it feels like it's in the back of her throat.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, as opposed to like, oh.
Yeah.
Right?
Whoa,
like,
I'm sorry. Cher? Was that Cher? Is she in this room right now? No, it's very, it has a presence, a shape, a depth to it. You can like step inside that voice.
It almost feels, it feels... Yeah,
pitch a tent in that voice.
It feels almost like a classically trained tenor, where it's like it's in the back, it's open, it's wide, it's not bright and forward.
Right, which is the product, maybe counterintuitively, of a lot of control and discipline.
That's
and
right.
Practice,
yeah,
right. To get that open sound.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Big hollow, made for a cathedral. Hmm. So we've got Dua Lipa winning Best Throwback for just nailing the house sound, especially in a moment when groups like Disclosure playing the house, but hadn't really been having a particular moment in the top 40 for a little while. And then, boom, this track comes out, and it just proves just how indelible house style is.
You make a strong case, Charles.
We're going to come back in just a second, and we're going to go somewhere very controversial.
I can't wait.
We're going to talk about
the alternative Grammys. Continue.
We're going to talk about the worst metaphor. It's the worst song. It's the worst metaphor. You probably already know where we're going to go.
I have no idea.
I am going to get totally burned for what I'm about to say.
Okay.
I'll catch you there in a second.
See you then.
Okay, so I love seeing music live about as much as I like talking about it. So today, our friends at StubHub want to know, Nate, what's on your live show bucket list?
Okay. I've actually thought about this.
Oh, yeah.
Because when Prince died, I was like,
oh, yeah.
Devastated, not just because of that loss, but because I'd always heard what an incredible live performer he is.
Right.
And I'd never seen him live, and now I would never have the chance. And that was hard.
Yeah.
So I have been thinking about this.
Okay.
Who do I need to see?
Yeah.
And I think that artist is Stevie Wonder.
Oh my gosh.
That's a big bucket list. I've seen like tons of videos of him performing, and it's extraordinary. I mean, he goes from singing to playing the piano to playing the chromatic harmonica, and it sounds. Like, his voice sounds like a recording. It sounds exactly live. He just sounds exactly the way he does on record. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be keeping my eye on StubHub for next time Stevie Wonder comes to town, for sure.
So I've got... I've seen him twice, but I want to... I've got to see Paul McCartney again. It's like my favorite show I've ever seen. I saw him at the closing of Candlestick Park in San Francisco, which was...
Okay.
That was the last show the Beatles had played was at Candlestick, and so then Mayor Lee had asked Paul if he would play Candlestick before they tore it down.
Really?
And that was really special. So I want to see him again, but the one that's absolutely on my bucket list, I don't know how, but for some reason I missed the opportunity and probably could have gone to see Beyonce at the Rose Bowl, and I missed it.
Yeah,
and
you missed
I didn't just miss it. I feel like I missed out on an essential cultural moment. I have got to go see the next Beyonce tour.
Yeah.
That is my biggest bucket list right now.
Okay, good. Well, we've got our eyes on the prize. That's what's key.
Yeah. So StubHub is here to help you make more music memories. You can get tickets to any genre, any artist, anytime, and explore your lifestyle with StubHub.
Go to StubHub.com/pop to find your next concert ticket.
That's StubHub.com/pop. Oh boy! So I'm actually nervous about this.
You're shaking.
Yeah, it's the thing is. All right, here's the deal.
Yeah,
I love Lady Gaga.
Great,
but I am a Star Is Born skeptic.
Okay,
and though the song "Shallow" won Best Pop Duo and Best Song for Visual Media, was nominated for many other things, including an Academy Award, not just Grammy.
Right.
I really don't like the song. But I have to put up a little disclaimer. While watching this film, I think I was in tears. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The first time I heard the song, I was like, that's a beautiful song. And as soon as I left the theater and I thought about it, I was like, I like that song. I like that movie. Now, on the film side, I've really had issues with representations of her agency within her career. I was upset about the sort of lack of intervention in her lover's alcoholism and abuse. And I also, you know, frankly, the underlying message really irked me, which was this idea of if you just have something to say, you can be a star. But I didn't think that Allie, the pop star, Lady Gaga's character, actually had something to say in her music. It felt kind of shallow. And yeah, what are you thinking?
I'm just thinking that we're going to be pilloried.
Absolutely. I think that's totally fair. Maybe in her defense, let's give her some airtime and we'll just give a little bit of the chorus of Shallow.
Great.
Beautiful performance. I mean, stunning voice.
Yeah.
It's moving. I mean, you are grabbed right on. I mean, it's not just the audience cheering in the background that has you. It's very well done. And yet, the song is metaphorizing a swimming pool to talk about personal and social change.
Okay.
She's off the deep end. She's going to dive in. She's far from the shallows now. And I feel like, you know, the movie, there's this scene where they're overlooking, they're at Chateau Marmont in Hollywood, overlooking this billboard of her, of Allie that's just been posted up.
Right.
Sort of this kind of saccharine, I'm not sure, sort of saccharine relationship that her partner has and thinking like, you've sort of sold out.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like this song was written at the Chateau Marmont while going swimming in a swimming pool. The point of view of the swimming pool metaphor just doesn't do it for me.
Okay, tell me more. What's your issue here?
I just don't think it's a very powerful metaphor for social change.
You know, this is longer than I've ever thought about the meaning of the words in this song. Okay, so they're in the deep end, which symbolizes what? Sort of striking out, being brave, taking a risk.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And versus the shallows are sort of is safety and the predictable and in the everyday or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You would prefer an ocean, perhaps? Or
I think the ocean is a much more beautiful metaphor.
What about a lake? Would you go with a lake?
I would take a lake.
Would you take a river?
I would take a river.
Pond.
ponds have pond scum.
So estuary.
I would even go for a swamp.
Lagoon?
Sure.
I got more by you.
What you got another one? No other bodies of water.
Man, that's it. We've named them all.
Okay, that's all the bodies of water. Great. It just isn't my favorite body of water. That's it.
I can't argue with that. That's
so
fair enough.
I think it's a great song, great performance, worst metaphor.
You know what I would nominate this song for?
Yeah.
Best song to do at karaoke.
Oh.
It is really fun. Great duet. Great to just let loose on those shalalas.
Do you want to give us a little sneak peek?
I would. Got a little laryngitis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's too bad. Really unfortunate.
Too bad.
I want to go now to best conceptual composition.
Cool.
This is one of the most powerful songs of last year and much discussed. It's very hard to, I think, add anything to it. This is Childish Gambino's This Is America, which won best record, song, and music video. Probably was first recognized for its extremely powerful music video and its representations of black identity and police brutality, mass incarceration, all you know, basically a barrage of references about American race relations.
Totally.
And what I wanted to do was take a look at how does the music mirror what's happening imagistically. So the first thing we should do is obviously hear a little bit of This Is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. I was listening to this, and I had actually just recently listened to this Ezra Klein podcast where he was talking with Jill Lepore, one of the great American historians, writers, intellectuals, Harvard professor, and New Yorker writer, and just one of the most brilliant people. And in their conversation, they are going into the duality of American national identity. So here's Ezra breaking that down.
Okay.
What seems to me to be happening is that a lot of the American story that was being worked through in history was about the story of how did America become so great? How did we become the world's only global superpower? How did this country started out of nothing? How did it become so fantastic? And a lot of the more recent work is there seems to be more attention to the kind of sins upon which America was built and the threads of our history that were not that great and the things that we struggle with. There seems to be an effort to create an almost parallel narrative.
So here with This Is America, I actually think we're getting both of these narratives, this American exceptionalism and this American atrocity, because This Is America has two very different sides to it. We didn't play yet the introductory material and the sort of the A side to the song. So let's take a listen to what I think is representing sort of this American exceptionalism identity within This Is America. Now, I think for a lot of listeners, when the song eventually shifts back into what we heard originally, the sort of the darker side of it, the A side might seem like a foil for what is really This Is America. But I think that this is non-ironic to me. I'm hearing that, you know, within this, there is the land of opportunity where a immigrant black man can make a living. And he, of course, is indexing that with bringing in gospel choir and West African guitars, which are connecting to the history of American slavery. So there's a lot happening on the American exceptionalism side. And I think one point that's really important to point out would be someone who's doing a backing vocal on this, right? So 21 Savage, who as of today, I think is maybe no longer being detained by ICE, but was a backing vocalist on this track. And the producer, Ludwig Göransson, who accepted the award for this song, did shout out, hey, you know, he ought to be here. This is a sort of deeply disturbing and unfortunate manifestation of both sides of this song. Someone who's from another country, but who's making his living here and is detained on sort of false pretenses of visa issues, but is actually physically detained and put behind bars. So what I'm hearing on this first half of this track is already bleeding into the darker side of the American narrative, but this is upbeat when we're listening to the music of it. It's major key. It has joyous gospel singers. It has this really sort of also upbeat guitar. Right. And all of it, for me, paints that idea of American exceptionalism. So then we move.
Sounds like there's a kalimba in there, too.
Oh, yeah, right. And also pointing to a different narrative, saying so much of that identity comes from, of course, the immigrants that bring that through, right, and especially those who were brought here not by their own choice.
Yeah.
So let's move then into the other side of that, which is the American atrocity. That is the second half, the sort of B part of This Is America.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up.
So here we have underneath it this minor dark wobble bass that is going back and forth. And it almost has like a Jaws-like effect, like something is chasing you. You know, don't get caught slipping up. This is America. He goes on to talk about police brutality and gun violence and the commodification of black culture. And so this is all of the dark side of American identity. And so I listened to both these sides. And I'm like, wow, that's really brilliant. He's got both of these different narratives. And I think they're a little bit in competition with each other. Back to the Ezra Klein part about these two different identities. Is one more important than the other? Well, Jill Lepore actually comes in and corrects Ezra and sort of catches us up to what the real history is.
You draw the distinction between sort of an American exceptionalism, American triumphalism narrative, American history, and a kind of American atrocity, genocide, slaughter, enslavement story. Those, I entirely agree with you. You could sort a lot of American historical writing into one of those two categories. Where I'm going to disagree with your characterization is that you see that as a change, that we used to tell a triumphalist story and now we tell a story of atrocity, that there's been a change over time. When in fact, what you see when you read the history of American history is that those two narratives are always competing with one another. So you have triumphalist accounts in the 19th century, say something like George Bancroft, who was a Secretary of War and also an American historian, writes the first, you know, mammoth history of the United States. It's a story of manifest destiny. But you also have Frederick Douglass, who I think needs to be understood, among many other things, is a great American historian, writing essentially the story of slavery, writing the history of slavery. Or you have, in the early decades of the 20th century, W.E.B. Du Bois, the great American historian, who writes about the failure of Reconstruction and offers an entire, starts a whole kind of counter-argument against the kind of lost cause of the Confederacy interpretation of American history. So there have always been these dueling accounts. But I think people who are doing the sophisticated work are actually trying to break out of that false division, right, and see— and I think Du Bois and Douglas were in this tradition as well, and see both sides of that, and see that they are actually flip sides of the same coin, of a single coin.
So just like these great writers that she mentions, I think that Childish Gambino is in this project of not saying America, this is America, is one or the other, but is actually the two of them, and we get that thesis, antithesis, and synthesis.
There you go. Yeah.
In the final outro of the song, when the two combine. So This Is America is both the gospel choir, and it is also that dark Jaws-like wobble bass that's always behind you trying to catch up and take you out.
Damn, Charles. Two quick thoughts.
Yeah.
One is that it's interesting. Your reading makes me reconsider some of the sort of vocal interjections in the background of both of these sections. You know, these sort of cries and screams and laughter. And it's like, it makes me think of how you can't always tell whether those are cries of joy or cries of pain.
Right.
Maybe that's intentional. Mm. The way you know, you sometimes you hear something, a cry on the street, and you're like, oh, I can't tell if that someone's laughing or fighting. And the other thing is, you know, this idea that I think in some when certain events happen in the United States, people will say like, oh, this isn't, you know, that's not American, you know, or that is, this is the most American thing. Mm. And I think what Gambino is kind of pointing out in this track is like, it's all America.
Yeah.
This is America. Right. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not, there is no golden ideal of exceptionalism or atrocity. It's all.
This episode of Switched on Pop was brought to you by StubHub.
With tickets to more than 10 million live events worldwide, StubHub is the world's largest ticket marketplace.
Whether you want to see your favorite artist of all time or a new up-and-comer, you can find tickets to any genre, any artist, anytime on StubHub.
Because going to concerts is more than just entertainment. It's a lifestyle.
Lifestyle.
Yeah.
All right. Go to StubHub.com/pop to find your next concert ticket.